Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another Monday Memos from Concordia Seminary. We're going to interview today an individual who does not call St. Louis his home, but who is all the way from Gallup, New Mexico. He has just completed the second term of summer school here on our campus, and in fact, he is one of the approximately 250 students who studied here during June and July. With us today is Pastor Walter Snyder. Pastor Snyder, in doing a little research on you, I discovered that you were born in Kansas City, and you were graduated from our sister seminary in Springfield in 1968, is that correct?
That's correct. Originally, I should have graduated from this seminary in 1954, but after taking an early vicarage, I served in the Army and attended the university, and then finished at Springfield after that.
Oh, I see. Your first call after graduation was to Northeast Texas. I don't know the name of the city.
Denniston and Honey Grove. I had a dual series and also served in air base during that time.
I see. That was quite a load for a first call, wasn't it? And from there you went to Southeast Kansas. What was the name of that?
Pittsburgh, Kansas. This was the location of the State College and was a town and gown ministry then, which presented some unique opportunities in that I had to deal with largely rural members in the congregation and college students and professors from the campus.
Well, that really was interesting. You mean you combined the two?
Yes.
Anything interesting that you'd like to share with us on that?
Well, really nothing unique about it, except it did present some difficulties, both in trying to make it understandable for some who had had perhaps only a sixth grade education and others who had PhD degrees, making illustrations relevant to both.
I would think so. How long were you pastor
there? I was pastor there for 8 years.
8 years, And in 1971, you accepted the pastorate of Trinity Lutheran Church in Gallup, where you are now. In addition to serving Trinity as pastor, I believe you're also missionary at large for all of western New Mexico and eastern Arizona. How much territory does that cover?
Well, first of all, I guess the term missionary at large is not an official designation, but that's what it amounts to.
It usually isn't, I guess.
And the area covers approximately 200 miles square. The next closest church to the north is Farmington, New Mexico, which is about 120 miles. South is Silver City, which is 200 and some miles.
There are no other Lutheran congregations
in between.
Isn't that a little bit hard to get used to?
It puts miles on a car in a hurry.
I'm sure it does. You do need a car, though, and not a helicopter.
That's right.
Okay. Your present ministry, I think, is quite different from the normal. If by normal we mean the usual white or black or white and black community. Can you tell us something about Trinity Church and your ministry in the area where you are?
I might begin by stating a comment made by an early Wisconsin Synod missionary to the Apaches who was asked to survey Gallup with the possible thought of starting a church there. This was in its heyday about 5 years after the town had started as a mining community. And his opinion was that a church would never get started there, that the devil had too firm a foothold. Well, it took 42 years of Pastor Sneed coming down from Albuquerque and serving a few scattered Lutherans there on a rather irregular basis, but whenever he could, anywhere from one to three or four families. And finally, after 42 years, the congregation was started.
After 42 years.
Most men would have given up long before then, I believe. But at the present time now, we have two black families in the congregation. We have the usual number of Germans, Norwegians, Swedes, Danes, and other Lutherans, who, by the way, come from a wide variety of Lutheran backgrounds. We have several Zuni people attending. We have several Navajo people. At the present time, intermittently, I even have a Hindu lady from India who is attending services. Most of these people do live in and immediately around Gallup, but some, for instance, I have five families at the present time living and working at the Zuni Pueblo, which is 45 miles south of us. It means they have to make a 90-mile round trip every time for church.
That's a pretty long way to go to church.
I have another family. I just recently confirmed the husband and wife on Pentecost, in fact, and they make a 135-mile round trip almost every Sunday. Mm-hmm. They make it to church at least three Sundays out of the month.
Mm-hmm. Well, is the most of your time spent in this congregation or as a traveling missionary, or is that...
Well, what we have done, for instance, with scattered Lutherans that we have become aware of, either through home pastors writing us or someone else informing us, we encourage them to transfer their membership to our congregation, but some of these are then served by services being held in their home. We've had two families at Tohatchee, New Mexico, 30 miles north of Gallup, where we started services about 2.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of this, we have confirmed several adults and several children. At present time, this summer, we are not meeting. They pool rides and come in for church, largely because many of the people are gone.
Mm-hmm.
But we will, this next year, at least be continuing with Bible classes during the week. In addition to this, I've been having services at Quemado, New Mexico, and Greer and Holbrook, Arizona. These I've served only once a month, and it's a 367-mile circuit the weekend that I make those three places.
Would you do that on a regular basis, like the third Sunday of the month or something?
I have tried to make it the first Sunday of the month, but due to illness this spring, the past several months, these places have not been served, other than the fact that they are still being sent tapes. I do the Sundays when I don't go there. We tape our church services and mail these to the people and make them worship in their homes. We've extended the tape ministry also as far away as Sitka, Alaska, where some former members now live. And I'm also instructing several classes of confirmation age children in the catechism by means of cassette tape.
I see. That's really interesting. I know we're probably jumping around a little bit here, but I have a feeling that the one question that's in the minds of many in our radio audience is why in the world are you taking summer school courses here at the seminary? What do you hope to gain from such courses?
Well, several things. One thing, because of the type of ministry I have, I guess it's easy to get involved too much in practical aspects, and one doesn't always study as he ought to, just for the sake of continued self-improvement. Another is that I hope to produce some materials which will be of service not only to our church, but perhaps to Christianity in general, particularly in the way of any further Christian outreach among Indian people of our area.
I see. Well, that reminds me of something that I'm looking at here right now. Before we went on the air, you handed me this coloring book, the title of which is My Navajo Coloring Book. You are the author and illustrator of this little booklet, which was published in 1971. At the top of each page is some wording in English. Looking at this, for instance, we take care of our families, sheep and goats. We are good shepherds. Then there's some writing underneath, and on the next page it says, Jesus is a good shepherd, we are his little lambs. How about telling us something about this little booklet?
This occurred, and actually the drawings were made in the English text produced before I ever went to Gallup. We had spent the four summers previous to that, our vacations were spent on the Navajo Reservation at the only mission that was there at the time, the only Lutheran mission, which was an ALC-operated mission. We would take clothing out, sewing machines, and so forth for these people. And one of the teachers expressed a desire for having something in the way of a coloring book that would deal more with the lifestyle of the Indian children rather than the type that was available on the market with white frame homes and fire engines and policemen on the corners.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was produced, and shortly after arriving in Gallup, I began Navajo studies at a branch we have of the University of New Mexico. And with the aid of one of my instructors, I produced the Navajo text for it then. Of course, this is usable not only for the Navajo children in Vacation Bible School or supplementary religious instruction, but it's also a useful mission education tool to be used among our own Lutheran Sunday school children to get them a little bit acquainted with lifestyles and so on.
Well, suppose there are some in the audience who would like to at least take a look at this. What would they do? Is it available here?
There's no one here in St. Louis who carries it in stock, no, but it is available. They could simply order from me at Post Office Box 483, Gallup, New Mexico.
And to address you, Reverend Walter Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R, right?
Right.
I see. Okay. Well, what you haven't been telling us, Pastor Snyder, but I think that we can read between the lines here, is that you are sort of the, I hate to call you specialist, but you certainly dealt an awful lot with Indians. How did you become interested in working with the Indians?
I guess, first of all, because my father had lived among Indian peoples in Oklahoma for a long time, and also as a child I grew up finding arrowheads and knowing a number of Indian kids myself. And then as time went on, and it developed even more in seminary, and finding out, for instance, that the first book ever published in an American Indian dialect was Luther's Small Catechism for the Delaware Indians by the early Swedish settlers. And then finding we were doing so little among any of the American Indian people, really. In fact, when I graduated from the seminary in 1958, this is the way I had hoped to go, but there simply weren't any openings available. We weren't doing that much. And then my wife kind of brought it to a head by getting interested in this Navajo mission as an LWML project while we were in Kansas. And writing for information, and that resulted in our first trip out there. And then when Pastor Zimbrick, who preceded me in Gallup, retired, he suggested my name to the congregation for the call list, and the congregation extended me a call. In the call, it was also stipulated that they wanted work extended both among the Spanish-American people and also among the Indians. But I found since then, really, it really takes a resident person in an Indian community really to do the most effective work, because the Indians tend to identify more with an individual rather than with an organization. And so at best, I suppose I'm really just a stopgap measure there, although we are getting more and more Indian people, Zuni and Navajo particularly, within Gallup itself. Then we also have a number of others represented from the Laguna Pueblo, for instance, and also some Hopi people.
Well, you're finding out very rapidly how little I know about this, but does each one of these tribes have its own dialect?
Not only its own dialect, Navajo is a very separate and distinct language from either Hopi or Zuni, for instance. It's an Athabaskan dialect, and it's spoken by several small groups on the Pacific coast and by a couple of small groups in Alaska. It's a difficult language because it's a tonal language, which we're not accustomed to.
Now, you speak it.
Not really, no. I can read it. I can understand some of it. I can say some things. For instance, I can ask directions and carry on light conversation. But, well, as one Navajo expressed it, that if a white man stayed there 40 years and studied and spoke Navajo the whole time, at the end of the 40 years, he would be as fluent in it as a 5-year-old Navajo child was. So.
And that doesn't sound too terribly optimistic, does it?
No.
But at least you are able to converse in the language when called upon. Another question that I've been wondering about since we've been talking here How were you received by the Indians? Did it take a long time?
It does, really, because it's kind of a thing of people learning to trust you and dealing with you as an individual. Some of it, of course, is quite understandable with broken treaties and other things that have happened in the past. And certainly one thing that has made it easier for me with many people is the fact that my wife is also involved in work among the Navajos. She works for the Navajo tribe itself in the Division of Continuing Education. She teaches adult education.
I see. Well, that's an excellent team ministry, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But you are saying that once they do accept you, you've kind of got it made.
With that individual or with that individual and their family.
Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't mean, you know, that you immediately gain widespread community acceptance.
Yeah, I can understand that. What would you say is the percentage of Christians among the Indians in your area?
I suppose it's difficult to put a positive figure on. It's been estimated about 3% of the Navajo and less than 1/8 of 1% among the Hopi and about 1/2 of 1% among the Zuni.
Is that right? Is that because so little work is done, or?
Well, part of it is because they are slow to give up the old ways, and with the Zuni and the Hopi particularly, much of this dates back to the Great Pueblo Revolt of 1680.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, both the Zuni and the Hopi people tore down the church, murdered the priests who were there, and the Hopi allow no religious groups to work on their reservation at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there is very little work. It's, well, the next thing impossible for a Christian church to get started on the Zuni reservation either, with the exception of the Catholic Church, which was rebuilt, in the small Christian Reformed Church.
Well, that leads me to the next question. Just what is our church doing in the area of ministry to Indians? For instance, how many congregations are there?
The easy way to answer it would be to say not very much. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has only one mission among the Navajo, one full-time mission.
Only one.
And Reverend Donald Brenn is pastor there. He's been there now for about 7.5 years. Pastor Brenn is himself 1/4 Chippewa Indian.
Mm-hmm.
He has developed a good rapport with the people. He's in one of the two towns on the reservation, one that was built up around the tribally owned sawmill.
Mm-hmm.
And he has for 3 terms served on the town council at the request of the people, including 1 term by special appointment of the tribal chairman as chairman of the town council.
Mm-hmm.
He now has 2 services, an English one in the morning and a Navajo one every evening. A vacation Bible school this past year of around 125 children for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these people are picked up and hauled some distance by a bus or a car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very slow thing and oftentimes quite discouraging.
Well, I would think so.
Then we have my preaching station at Tallahassee, which is both Indian and Navajo. It is on the reservation, but as I said, it really takes someone like him to be operating full-time, and we need a lot more of these places. Last year, while serving on the Humanities Council for New Mexico, we got the figures of 125,000 population for the Navajo people at the present time.
Wow.
And by 1985, it's supposed to be 250,000. And I think that shows us what our church and all Christian churches have to do yet, and relatively how little is being done. And one can't help but wonder and pray about men and manpower, and I think even more so sometimes the vision of some of our top officials to see that these things are investigated and taken care of.
Right, that sounds like a real challenge to our church, doesn't it? Another question I have is, do all Navajo speak the English language?
No, I would say most of those since about 1930 have had sufficient education that they do speak it and understand it at least reasonably well, but there are many of the older people who are still monolingual.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I know of one instance where there was a man who was a school bus driver, and he knew the shape of the stop sign but could not read the word stop on the sign. Mm-hmm. My wife had him in class, and she taught him sufficient English in class that he was able to read through the first two readers of the Dick and Jane series.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
How do most of the Navajo Indians particularly make their living?
Quite a number work for the government itself, the federal government and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Public Health Service, and related agencies. Then a number work for the tribe itself, which is becoming almost as bureaucratic as the federal government. The old standby, of course, was raising sheep.
Mm-hmm.
They were always the nomadic people until recent years, moving their flocks from place to place. Now they tend to be more settled, but still a lot of sheep raising. They also weave the beautiful Navajo rugs and blankets that everyone admires,
yeah,
and many of them do quite beautiful silver work also.
Yes, is the piece of silver that you're wearing by any chance made by them?
No, mine happens to be made by the Zunis.
Oh, really?
This is the type of work that's referred to as a combination of channel and inlay. It's a figure of desert quail.
Uh-huh. Beautiful. And I've seen some of the other work that you've brought with you on occasion. I wish we were on television right now so that our audience could see this. What would you say, Pastor Snyder, are the unique problems in ministering to the Indians?
Language, custom, understanding the religious background and how much their animistic religion affects their entire culture today, yet everything in society is constructed pretty well along the lines of what's taboo or what's permissible. The clan system is a thing. Also, the fact that the matriarchal society, the woman owns the property, inheritance rights are through the mother's side of the family and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of different things that add to the complexity of the problem. The thesis I'm working on at the present time is try to set down the Navajo religion in a form that is more familiar to our Western Christian way of thinking,
mm-hmm.
so that future missionaries might be able to understand it better
mm-hmm.
before they get into it.
Mm-hmm. So in general, you would say just a really good understanding of their culture and
mm-hmm.
their religion and so forth. Pastor Snyder, we've said very little about your family. You've told us a little bit about your wife. I'm sure that they're anxious for you to come back home again. You also have children, right? How many?
Yes, I have 5 children, 4 sons and a daughter. 2 of the boys are studying St. John's College at Winfield this year.
Mm.
And while I'm not from St. Louis, my wife is,
mm-hmm.
the former Melba Grossman from the Scrubbing Deck section of St. Louis, South St. Louis.
Uh-huh. How about, are the 2 boys planning to go into the ministry by any chance, or is it too early to tell?
Well, one at the present time is planning on becoming a banker and is taking the business administration course. The
mm-hmm.
other one is intending to be a parochial school teacher and is taking the teacher training program.
I see. Uh-huh. Great. Well, are there any final thoughts or statements you wish to leave with us? I see our time has almost elapsed.
Yes, certainly. I think one of the greatest things that anyone could do for all of the work there is, first of all, to pray the Lord for his blessings on what relatively little is going on now in relation
mm-hmm.
to the need, and then secondly, to pray the Lord for more laborers in the harvest, and then also, since this is operated largely as a faith mission, the Navajo work, always support is welcome, either in the way of material help or in the way of finances also, to continue the spread of the work.
We will certainly remember that. Thank you so very much. You have heard Pastor Walter Snyder from Gallup, New Mexico, speak about his work among the Navajo Indians. Thank you again, Pastor Snyder.
Thank you, Gladys.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. and welcome to another Monday Memos from Concordia Seminary. We're fortunate to have in our studio today someone whose voice is becoming more and more familiar to our radio audience all the time, Dr. John Trotz, Dean of Academic Affairs here at the seminary. Dr. Trotz, I'm hoping that you can first of all fill us in on things that have been happening here at the seminary. And of course, at the top of the list is the fact that tomorrow our new school year begins. What can you tell us about the enrollment?
At the present time, it looks as if we're going to have about 335 students. We do not have the final figures because there are some students who haven't been able to make it.
Mm-hmm.
They may have taken a day or so extra vacation. Mm-hmm. And I suppose some of them may have had a little bit of car trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But it does look as if we're going to have about 335 students.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this, of course, includes the students who enrolled in the School for Graduate Studies,
mm-hmm.
and includes our vicars who are out doing their year of internship.
Mm-hmm.
But this does represent an increase of a little over 50 students over the figures which we had last year. So
mm-hmm.
we're very happy and very grateful to God for the fact that He has moved these students to come to Concordia Seminary to prepare for the work of spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. That increase is really quite significant, and I guess more than we had really hoped for.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're certainly very happy. It may even go a little higher depending on the number of students who come in late.
Right, uh-huh. How about the faculty? Those who were in the at the service last Friday evening are aware that three new faculty men were installed. Could you comment briefly on changes in the faculty?
Yes, we're very fortunate in having two men join us as full-time faculty men, and also to have another promising young man join us on the executive staff. Professor Francis Rosso comes to us from Concordia Senior College, Fort Wayne, and he will serve us as Professor of Practical Theology. His major responsibility will be in the area of homiletics, that is, training these young men to do the preaching from the pulpits of our church. He'll also serve in the office of the Dean of Student Affairs in assisting Dean Hopman and also in directing the worship program here at the seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very happy to have Professor Rosso join our faculty. He was my colleague for many years at Concordia Senior College. I came to respect him very highly. He's an excellent preacher, as I think we all found out
mm-hmm.
when he served as chaplain for the faculty preschool retreat. He has done quite a bit of writing. He's the author of a book, and I know that he's going to make a substantial contribution to our program.
Mm-hmm.
The other new faculty man is Dr. Richard Schultz, who comes to us from Fort Rivers, New Jersey. He also will be serving as Professor of Practical Theology. His major responsibilities will be, his major classroom responsibilities will be in education and again in homiletics.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes to us with a great deal of experience. He served as a director of Christian education in the Eastern District of our church. He then joined the faculty of Concordia Theological Seminary, which at that time was in Springfield, Illinois. He served there as professor of education and subsequently was elected president of the institution. Then he accepted a call into the parish ministry and has served as pastor in Fort River, New Jersey for these last 2 years. We're very happy that he's going to be returning to the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in addition, Dr. Schultz will be serving as Director of Advanced Studies. This is an area which we are very anxious to develop here at Concordia Seminary.
What do you mean by Director of Advanced Studies? I'm sure we're all wondering.
Well, what he will be doing will be directing the graduate program, but then we expect him to take off in developing a program of continuing education for pastors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other professions do a great deal of work mm-hmm. in this area. Medical men go back to school, lawyers go back to school. Sometimes it's a little hard to get preachers back to school.
That's true.
So what we want to do is to develop a very attractive program of non-credit work in developing the men's skills and abilities in the parish ministry. Now, there will be some work which will be for credit. We do plan to be conducting credit courses at two extension centers this year. We will have an extension center at Concordia College in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and another extension center at Christ College in Irvine, California.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Schultz is interested in developing other extension centers, and it's quite possible that before the year is out, we'll have additional extension centers where courses will be offered for credit.
Mm-hmm.
Then we are going to be offering some of these non-credit courses. We have a series of courses on color videotape, which will be available to pastors on a non-credit basis, dealing with some of the current problems and also suggesting ways in which they can improve their ministry. We hope to have a series in parish administration, this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also do want to serve our lay people. And we will be developing courses for lay people, which will be available also by extension from Concordia Seminary.
I see. That sounds interesting. I'm sure that'll be of interest to our radio audience, too.
Yes, we will have our usual series of lay lectures in the fall and spring.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be conducted here on campus. But
mm-hmm.
in addition to these, for people who cannot attend these courses here at Concordia Seminary,
mm-hmm.
there will be these videotape courses.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already had a number of inquiries, and we will be sending them out. So we're very happy about that.
Do you have any idea how soon we'll be ready to go on this?
We're ready to go right now. I just mm-hmm. completed arrangements, that is, I was dealing in this matter before Dr. Schultz arrived on campus, and I've already completed arrangements for one course in Ashland, Wisconsin. So
mm-hmm.
I know that that's
mm-hmm.
going.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And we're very happy about that. I've had several other inquiries, and I know that Dr. Schultz is following them up, and that we will have
mm-hmm.
additional courses offered for lay people.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Now, we don't want to forget the Reverend Mr. Smith, who will be joining us as an administrative assistant. His major responsibilities will be working with President Bowman, and I suppose he's almost going to be a jack of all trades
mm-hmm.
for us. He's going to be working wherever he's needed, and we are very happy to have him join us. He's an alumnus of 1 year standing. And I know that he's going to make a really substantial contribution here to our program.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now, one of our faculty men left, is that correct?
Yes. Dr. Jacob Heckard accepted a call to the faculty of Concordia College in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He will be teaching Greek there and religion. This is the school which serves as a feeder institution for Concordia Seminary. And he will really be serving us in preparing men for us and also in guiding them and helping them in preparing for their work here
mm-hmm.
at Concordia Seminary.
Mm-hmm.
In one way, we were sorry to see the Heckards leave us. In another way, we appreciate what they're going to be doing for us. They're going to be serving us on a different level. And I know that he and his family are going to be a real help to us in motivating students and directing them
mm-hmm.
to Concordia Seminary.
Right. Well, this gives us a good idea of enrollment and faculty. Now, before we go into the topic that we really want to talk about, we could cover a few upcoming events. In looking at the September calendar, I noticed that next Wednesday, September 8th, we are going to have a lecture by Dr. Rensdorf. Dr. Rensdorf is a renowned German theologian, I believe, and a man about whom we've heard a great deal. Can you tell us a little more about both about his lecture and about the man?
Yes, we're very fortunate in having Dr. Engstorf on campus. That's coming up now on Wednesday. He'll be talking to faculty and to students on the general topic of Luke, the evangelist to the Hellenistic world. Gladys, the program is open to the general public, so we certainly would like to invite members of our radio audience to come and join us. He's a renowned New Testament scholar, and we're certainly very happy to have him here on the seminary campus. He published a book already in 1934, which was widely read and then translated into English. The English title is Apostolate and Ministry, the New Testament Doctrine of the Office of the Ministry. He's published commentaries on Luke, done a great deal of work in New Testament studies and in Judaic studies, and right now, at 72 years of age, he's involved in producing a four-volume concordance on the works of Flavius Josephus, the first-century Jewish historian.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very fortunate in having Dr. Rengstorff come to the campus, and we certainly would be happy to have members of our radio audience join us on Wednesday for his presentation. He'll be here at 10:45 a.m. in the morning in Pritzlaw Hall.
Okay. Another event on the September calendar, September 29th to be exact, is a lecture by Dr. Herman Preuss, and I believe this is the first in the series of the annual Reese lectures. Dr. Preuss is a member of the American Lutheran Church, and I believe he's been on the faculty for 31 years at Luther Theological Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. Can you tell us a little bit about that lecture?
Yes. Dr. Preuss, I believe, is the uncle of President Preuss, the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He's a widely recognized Luther scholar. Presently, he's professor emeritus of New Testament theology at Luther Seminary in St. Paul. We're very happy to have him deliver the Oswald G.L. Reese lecture. The general topic for these lectures is the cardinal principles of Lutheranism, and he's going to be talking about the universal priesthood and the ministry. He'll be here on Wednesday, September 29, and his lecture will be presented again at 10:45 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dr. Rengstorff's lecture, it's open to the public, and we would be very happy to have members of our radio audience join us for that presentation. So he's an outstanding scholar. He's studied not only here in the United States, but abroad. He served as parish pastor, and he was a Fulbright lecturer at the University of Oslo, Fulbright research fellow. He's written widely, so he certainly is a man that we want to listen to. I know he's going to have much to tell us.
Fine. Now on to the main topic that we really would like to talk about today. The preschool faculty retreat just conducted on our campus last week. Dr. Cox, could you describe, first of all, what we mean by a preschool or faculty preschool retreat? What is the purpose of such a retreat?
We're anxious for faculty members to get together after the summer recess. We really, here at Concordia Seminary, don't have as much time as it seems we have, because we have the two summer sessions, one in June and one in July. However, the month of August is a month usually for rest and relaxation. The members of the faculty then are returning, and we like to have them get together and meet for two full days. This has been the pattern. We meet here at the seminary, and usually here a number of papers which are then available for discussion, so that there's dialogue between the speaker or speakers and the faculty. So it's a general get-together. The entire plenary faculty joins in. This means that not only the members of the teaching faculty are present, but also members of the executive staff. And We found these very, very worthwhile. It's a way of sort of getting off on the right foot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of talking about some of the current topics of interest. It's a way of exchanging information and reactions and observations after a summer of separation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the retreat was attended not only by faculty members, as you indicated, but also by the Board of Control members. Why was the board included?
We're very happy that the board members were able to be with us. We felt that the topics which we were going to be discussing would be of considerable interest to them. And so we invited the members of the Board of Control to join us. Now, these are all busy men. They have other responsibilities. 8 of the 11 found it possible to be with us for at least part of the faculty preschool retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Gladys, this is an evidence of their interest and their concern for Concordia Seminary. You know, so often boards of control or boards of trustees are off in the distance. The members regard their assignment as a mere formality.
Mm-hmm.
They're there more or less to rubber stamp the decisions of the administration and to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
But our board is very much involved in the program at the seminary. The members of the Board of Control are interested
mm-hmm.
in what we are doing, and they're concerned with the Synod's program of preparing pastors. I think that the fact that 8 of the 11 found it possible to be with us is an indication of that interest. Now, the men who are not here are men who have other responsibilities that made it impossible. They are men, too, who would have had to come a considerable distance.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very pleased with the fact that we had so many of the board members, and by the way, we even had some wives of board members
mm-hmm.
join us, which I think is an mm-hmm. indication that the Board of Control is very interested
mm-hmm.
in the work here.
And I think their interest is very evident at the retreat.
Yes, because
mm-hmm.
they participated
yeah,
in
mm-hmm.
Some of the discussions.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't feel that they were just there to listen, but they participated, they raised questions,
mm-hmm.
they had some things to say, so we're very happy to have them.
Right, now I see we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I wonder, Dr. Potts, could you describe for us what this year's retreat program was like? Kind of give us an overall picture. Tell us who the participants were and so forth.
Yes, the general topic for the retreat was the seminary and the synod, partners in the gospel. What we were trying to emphasize was the fact that the seminary and other agencies of the synod work together for the purposes of the synod, which is to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to the ends of the earth. And we're all partners, we're all working together. We thought that bringing together representatives of the various agencies of the Synod would be helpful in understanding, also in seeing how the program of other agencies of the Synod might fit with the seminary program, and developing the spirit of partnership which we're all interested in working to accomplish the purposes of the Synod to get out the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it worked really well. Now, we had Dr. Ed Weber, the first vice president of the Synod, come and tell us something about the situation in the Synod today, describe where we are, how the programs that have been outlined for the year are going, where we are in accomplishing the goals that have been set up for the synodical program for this year. I think he gave us a vision of the future as he sees it, what he thinks the future holds, and it was a very enlightening presentation, and I think also a very inspiring presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all saw that the challenges that are ahead of the church are tremendous. There are tremendous possibilities for the work that we are doing, and I believe that what he had to say would motivate all of us to do our very best to carry out the work Baptist Synod has outlined for us.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had Mr. John Schilke, who is the administrative officer of the Board of Directors of the Synod, come and talk about the work of the Board of Directors.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was helpful. I believe that faculty members understand a little bit better about what the Board of Directors are trying to do. I think faculty members understand some of the problems that the Board of Directors faces in allocating the financial resources of the church. There's always much more work than can be accomplished by the limited resources which we have, and so the Board of Directors has to make certain choices in allocating these mm-hmm. resources. I believe we had a very open and frank discussion with Mr. Schilke, and I'm very happy he was able mm-hmm. to join us. Then we had Dr. Arthur Allsweed, the Executive Secretary of the Board for Higher Education. He came and told us something about the work of the Board for Higher Education in carrying out its responsibilities in working with the colleges and seminaries of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And as usual, there was a good discussion and a good dialogue mm-hmm. with Dr. Allsweed. We know him very well because we all have had rather close connections with him and his work, and I think it was very good to talk to him once more and to express some of our feelings with regard to where the educational mm-hmm. program of the church should go.
Is it possible that this was a first, that the entire faculty and board met with a member of the Board?
Yes, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I'm sure that it's the first time
mm-hmm. that the board and faculty mm-hmm. met with the executive secretary.
Mm-hmm.
He has been out to talk to the faculty,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure there's been some contact with the board from time mm-hmm. to time, but the first time that the two groups
yeah.
had a chance to talk to him.
I was impressed with the cordiality that existed. I thought it was great.
And good spirit.
Yes, really good spirit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then we had Reverend Frank Starr, who edits The Witness and The Reporter, the official periodicals of our church, and he told us something about what he was trying to accomplish with these two periodicals.
Mm-hmm.
We were also very fortunate in having Pastor Nasker, who is the Executive Secretary of the Commission on Theology and Church Relations. A number of our faculty members are involved in the commission itself and in projects which they carry out, and so we were very happy that he was able to come out and tell us something about the programs of this commission, tell us where they're going, what they hope to accomplish. Then we also had Pastor Barry, who is the Executive Secretary of the Synodical Board for Missions. Of course, our work with the Board for Missions is very important. Our relationship is extremely important because we are preparing the men who are to carry out the assignments of the Board for Missions.
Mm-hmm.
Then on Friday, we had Dean Robert Rush from our sister school at Ann Arbor, Michigan with us. They are involved in developing the program of the third and fourth years of ministerial education, pre-seminary education. He told us of what they have been able to do. They've been very happy with the fact that they are an accredited institution. They've been accredited not only by the state of Michigan, but also by North Central Association. He was telling us something about their program and suggesting ways in which their program could be integrated with our program here at Concordia Seminary.
Mm-hmm.
This was really the longest presentation and also the longest discussion that we had, so we were very happy to have Dean Rush with us so that we could have this free and open and frank discussion.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up then with a presentation by the chairman of our Board of Control, Dr. Otto, talking about the relationship of the board to the faculty.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Friday evening we had dinner in which mm-hmm. we all joined together. And I think we had very fine fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
We deliberately cut that program short. We
yeah.
promised the faculty members that it would be a very short program, and we kept our promise.
Well, you certainly did. Well, Dr. Clark, I'm sorry that our time has elapsed. I know we could go on for some time, finishing talking about these. Is there any final comment you'd like to make?
Just this, that we're looking forward to a very fine year here at Concordia Seminary.
And thank you so very much for being with us today, Dr. Clark.